Okay, this is Gary Parrish again, and this is the Eye on College Basketball podcast. Again, I'm talking to you today on January 9th, which is roughly right in the middle of the actual regular season of college basketball. Joining me today is Eric Prisbel, who works for USA Today. Of course, he worked at a lot of different places. Was actually at in Norman, Oklahoma last night to see Kansas's win over Oklahoma. I'm going to talk to him about that in just a second. But Eric, I did want to talk a little bit first about the news of the day, which actually isn't college basketball related, college football related. I saw that you tweeted earlier after it became official that Penn State has hired James Franklin, that you've known James probably longer than most sports writers, since 2003 when you were at the Washington Post. I think you and I have similar opinions of this hire. I think the guy's a rising star. For folks who don't know, I live in the state of Tennessee, so I've been around James Franklin at Vanderbilt for a few years now. I don't want to say I know him well, but I host a radio show that he's been on many, many times, and I've just been blown away by what he's been able to do at Vandy, and I think he's going to be spectacular at Penn State. I gather you have a similar opinion.
Oh, totally, Gary. I mean, I got to say, I first met James Franklin in 2003. He was on the staff at Maryland under Ralph Reich, and Bill O'Brien, crazy enough, was also on that staff. Wow. And you could just tell James was not a typical assistant coach when you met him. He was extremely ambitious, and he knew how to deal with people better than just about anybody. He was charismatic. He could recruit like crazy and really connect with the kids, with the parents. And he knew how to play the media game, which is something guys like, Bobby Petrino, they're not exactly good at. Charlie Strong, not so sure about that. I think Texas missed out. I really do. I think James would have killed it at Texas, and I think he's going to do the same at Penn State when he's going to go into Maryland's backyard and just torch them in recruiting. And it's incredible. They could have had James Franklin a couple of years ago for football. They could have had Sean Miller for basketball. Now, I still like Mark Turgeon a lot, but that's incredible. And, you know, they didn't want James. They got rid of Ralph Friesian, and they said James will not be – Kevin Anderson, the new athletic director, that James would not be considered for the job. So he wanted to stay. He wanted to stay at Maryland, but he took a job that seemed like a graveyard destination. You know, Vanderbilt, you can't win there. And what he did there was miraculous. I went out to visit him, after his first year. After his first year at Vandy, and he gave me complete access in there and everything, like he does with everybody there, because he knows what you have to do. He hits the right buttons, and I think it's great. I'm really happy for him, and it's well deserved.
Well, you know, the sort of the pushback, and there's always somebody out there who's going to, you know, as everybody's complimenting a hire, are going to push back. And actually, one of the people today, he's a buddy of ours. He's a colleague of yours, Dan Wolkin, who covers college football. And like, Dan's on my radio show every single Friday. Dan and I used to live in the same city. Like, Dan Wolkin is one of my better friends in the industry. But he sort of pointed out on Twitter, listen, James Franklin only beat four teams with a winning record the entire time he was at Vanderbilt, which is a fact. It's true. But my counterpoint would be that's four more than he was supposed to. And he, you know, I mean, this guy coached at Vanderbilt, and he made Vanderbilt respectable, both in recruiting and on the field. And I'm with you. Once USC opened, once it became clear Texas was probably going to open, anytime somebody would ask me, to the extent that anybody would ask me about a college football hire, I would say, look, James Franklin should be the guy at both places. I mean, he is a star. And the only knock I've ever really heard on him is that some people will say, well, you know, he's a bit of a phony. And I don't know whether that's true or not, except this has always been my opinion on that sort of label. If you're a phony all the time, which means you're being great all the time, I'm just going to go ahead and assume that you're great. Like, if you're phony enough to fake being nice and great and awesome all of the time, then that is who you are. And so I think the world of the guy, and I think he's going to be, this is a bad – listen, Urban Meyer's great at Ohio State and Michigan's Michigan. Yeah. But you were – I think if you're one of those schools, you were probably hoping that Penn State would mess this up. I don't think Penn State messed this up.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And you know, the phony issue, I think that's a bit strong. I've heard it as well, trust me. But I consider him very polished, at times overly polished, the way he comes off. And he's very nice. I have to say, though, knowing him as long as I have, I never felt that I had a very intimate relationship with him. I just think everything is kind of on the surface. He doesn't say anything by accident. He knows exactly what he's doing. and he plays everything to his favor. And whether that is leverage with coaching searches or recruiting or whatever it may be. And he's just very shrewd, extremely smart. And I just think he will win wherever he goes because he's that good on the recruiting front. I didn't know that he could coach as well as what he showed. That's what my question was with James, but he surrounded himself with good people on the recruiting front. I knew he could tear it up in the SEC, even at a school like Vanderbilt. And going back where he has roots in Penn State, I'm really eager to see what he does in that state. And then also, again, going back, he has so many relationships at Maryland. And if he were head coach there, they'd have one of the best recruiting classes most years, you know, top 15 or so, I think. So it's going to be fun. And it's a great hire. And I agree. The Big Ten fans probably wished Penn State screwed it up, but they did not.
It's an interesting perspective. Let's talk some basketball. This is, like I said, the Eye on College Basketball podcast. You were, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, A, just because you're one of the voices that matter in the sport, but B, because you were going to be coming off of being inside the arena in Norman, Oklahoma last night where you watched the Kansas Jayhawks. I don't know if they struggled for a little bit, but ultimately pulled away and won and sort of bounced back from that home loss over the weekend to San Diego State. You saw Wayne Selden be great. You saw Andrew Wiggins probably blend in a little too much, which has been the complaint against him since the season started. You talked to Bill Self afterward privately outside the locker room, and he acknowledged to you that it's been a frustrating process coaching, quote, kids as opposed to, you know, 21, 22-year-olds like he coached last year. Just be interested initially to get your thoughts on the development of this young Kansas team and then Andrew Wiggins specifically.
Yeah, I think one of the most intriguing storylines of this season overall, nationwide, is what's going on at Kansas and what's going on in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And the experiments that Bill Self and John Calipari are in the midst of, kind of on-the-job training with their very talented rosters. And it's a race now to see how quickly that potential, so much potential, can turn into performance on the court. Can they get to that team where they needed to be by late February and March? Because we all know Randall in a couple of years will be tremendous in the NBA, and Wiggins will be a great athlete. Embiid will be out of this world, I think. I am extremely high on him.
I am too.
So it's just that, yeah, it has been frustrating for Bill. And I felt it was a little bit frustrating. I could see that because they didn't always play with the enthusiasm that you'd hope they could play with. And the same goes at Kentucky. He's battling the same thing. And these players have to learn, and they have to learn through the course of the regular season during tough conference, you know, schedules, that they have to play more for the team. And it's not about individual stats. They have to be selfless. And I think people forget that about that, or some people do, about that 2012 Kentucky. Kentucky team that defensive minded. They played for the group. And I think that's how I'm going to remember this team. But unfortunately, when that happens and you get a freshman laden team like that and they win a national title, people say, oh, you just recruit the best players and it will happen. Well, we're finding out at Kansas and Kentucky, it's not that easy. Now, I agree with Bill. I think they will come together. The conference schedule is going to be brutal. I mean, it's an excellent league. And with Andrew Wiggins, I got to say, he's played pretty much exactly the way I thought he would this season. After going to Huntington last year and spending a few days with him, seeing him up close, you and I both have seen him on the summer circuit for a few years now. I thought he would show flashes of brilliance. He's an extreme, freakish athletic specimen. But I thought a lot of times, and maybe most of the time, he would kind of blend in because that's his demeanor, that's his personality. I did not see that killer instinct most of the time in high school where he would take over games. I didn't think he could be like a Kevin Durant was at Texas, certainly not like LeBron James. So he's kind of played the way I thought he would, and that's not going to satisfy a lot of fans who thought he was the best, you know, prospect since LeBron James. And I think he would be content on an NBA team being a second or third option. I think he'd be happy with that. I just wonder if the fans across the country who have been following him will be happy with that.
It's interesting because I think these two statements can be mutually, you know, aren't necessarily. I think you could say both of these things. I think he can still be a top shelf prospect, but maybe not one of the top five or even 10 college basketball players in this particular year. I guess my go-to would be, if you didn't watch the games and just looked at the box scores, he's still the leading scorer for a top 20 team as an 18-year-old. That's, yes. You know, with possibly, you know, two other lottery picks on his roster. So, like, you know, you could start there and go, okay, Andrew Wiggins, he might not be doing what some people had hoped he would do, but the idea that he's a disappointment, like he's not a, you know, that's a little silly. That said,
oh, totally.
Yeah. Now that said, I'm with you. Like, you know, we both have eyeballs. And I actually went back and looked at a story I wrote in the preseason. And I was, you know, I wrote that I was skeptical that he would average more than about 15 points per game. I just thought that when you combined everything by the end of the year, it would be very clear he's the best college basketball player in the country. I that seems more unlikely to be the case now than it actually does to be the case. I can acknowledge that. But I still think there's a scenario where if it just clicks for him, then he can have a run through late February, early March, maybe into April, where everybody's on board with, oh, okay. I guess my hesitation would be, I don't know if he's got whatever trigger that is that a Kevin Durant yep. had or even a Derrick Rose had. I mean, you know, I was around Derrick Rose because of where I lived, and he was good all year long, but not overwhelming all year long. Chris Douglas Roberts was the first team All-American on that Memphis team that played for the national title. It was not Derrick Rose, and Derrick was kind of quiet like Andrew Wiggins. Derrick was willing to fit in, seemingly, like Andrew Wiggins, but then when that NCAA tournament started, something flipped in that kid, and he went wild yes. and started overwhelming everybody he played against, and it went from Michael Beasley was probably going to be the number one pick in the draft to Derrick Rose was the consensus number one pick in the draft. I didn't see whatever trigger Derrick Rose had that he flipped. I didn't recognize that trigger until he actually flipped it. And so I guess what I'm saying is perhaps Andrew Wiggins has that same sort of switch somewhere, but I haven't been able to identify it lately or up to this point. And that's an undeniable issue, not only if you're Bill Self, but I think if you're an NBA franchise trying to draft a future star, does he have the mindset to be a star? He's got the tools, physical tools. Does he have the mindset? I think that's a fair question.
Totally, totally. I think if you combined his athletic ability with Marcus Smart's demeanor, yes. his chip on his shoulder, his attitude, oh, then you'd have the best player in a long, long time in college. I agree with you. Derrick Rose was phenomenal in that 2008 NCAA tournament. I look at also Kemba Walker, what he did, yes. and just you want it on your shoulders. You got to be the guy that wants it and is willing to take over the game, can close out a game. I don't see him having that. He may, but look, he's going to be a lot better by March. I agree with that. But I think I would also agree that I don't think he could flip that switch with that. I just don't see it. Now, in a couple of years, he could be an NBA All-Star. I think he will be a very, very good pro. His athletic ability is off the charts. And, you know, he's got to refine his jump shot a little bit. But he has gotten stronger, seeing him up close, stronger than he was last year. So, but Embiid is a guy that I'm just in love with and I think could be the top pick.
I mean, how tempting is it going to be for somebody to take him number one? I'll tell you this. In the preseason, I went to Lawrence, spent a couple of days there, and I had yep. seen Embiid on television. I had, you know, I obviously knew where he was rated and all that stuff. But I saw him in a workout at Kansas in the practice facility, and I was like you, just blown away. And so when I had to do a mock draft, CBS Sports asked me to do one in the preseason because that's the business that we're in. I actually had him third. You know, I think I went Wiggins, Randall, Embiid, and people at that point were like, really? Because you know, does he deserve to be up there? Now, pretty much everybody has him in the top three, and some people are convinced that he's a legitimate challenger to Wiggins and Jabari Parker and perhaps even Julius Randle for the number one spot. And I think that's fair. Like, listen, I love Wiggins, or at least I love the idea of Wiggins. I think Parker at his worst is a NBA shot maker ready to go right now. And yes. but man, if you're talking highest ceilings, I could be convinced that Joel Embiid's got the highest ceiling of any of these dudes.
That's a good way to put it. Highest ceiling, I have little doubt that he has the highest ceiling among those four players. I really, it's just, it's off the charts. I can't remember seeing a player with that high a ceiling. I mean, man, I'd really have to go back to LeBron or something. I don't know if Odin stayed healthy. I'm not sure, but I think it's going to be really hard to pass him up for number one. I may be overly optimistic with that, but, and I'm really high on Jabari. I think he's as close to a sure thing as we have. Randall, I think, will be a beast in the pros. He'll continue to develop. Wiggins has some questions for sure. I think personality wise with Wiggins, we didn't get into that, but you know, he's not a guy who wants the limelight, not a guy who wants the spotlight. And I think he, to be the marketing guy and to kind of transcend the sport. And if shoe companies are going to throw whatever was reported, $150 million or something at the kid, you got to show a little bit more and you got to be a little bit smoother, you know, with the media and have something to say and have something to offer. But I totally agree. Embiid could be the top pick in the draft. That would not surprise me the way things are going.
You mentioned Marcus Smart earlier, and in your column that was posted late last night, early today over at usatoday.com, you sort of got, you know, you were live, you know, from Kansas, Oklahoma, but you sort of got into a little bit of the Big 12 and sort of what Kansas is going to face, you know, going forward. And it really is like I think the word you used is gauntlet of a schedule. It's, you know, you've got an Iowa State team that's better than anybody could have imagined. Oklahoma State, without Michael Cobbins, and you never know if Stevie Clark's going to get in trouble again. But still, that's a team. As long as you got Marcus Smart, LeBron Nash, Markell Brown, you're going to be good. Baylor, I think, is better than anybody or most people thought they would be, at least according to the national polls right now. I mean, you've got four really good teams, and then Kansas State and Oklahoma right there as well. There's not a whole lot of easy outs in this league. How do you project the Big 12 shaping up the rest of the way?
I think if you lose four games in the league, you may win the league outright.
Yeah.
I think it's very tough. Oklahoma State, I was cautiously optimistic about them coming into the year. I've been around them a lot. I've been around Marcus a ton. But losing Cobbins, I think, hurts. I really do. Marcus Smart is the guy. I'm one of the very few guys that really derail them. I do, and prevent them from winning the Big 12 Conference Championship. I'm going to go up and see them at Kansas in a week or so. And
I'm going to be there as well.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah. Okay, cool. Baylor, I mean, I was down there. They're very deep. I think Kenny Cherry has been the real difference, one of the real differences for that team. I'm always reluctant a little bit with Scott Drew's teams. They always have so much talent, tend to underachieve at times. This team could be different, but I'm still taking a wait-and-see approach. Iowa State's very good. DeAndre Kane is fantastic, and he's one of the best players not only in the Big 12 but in the country. His numbers are great, and they're a great offensive team. I have some questions about their defense, great home court advantage. Kansas State could be pesky, could upset some people along the way. Oklahoma, I think, will be a fringe NCAA tournament team. Rick Barnes has definitely overachieved at Texas so far. I think it's a better league than any league, maybe except the Big Ten, also because the bottom of the league is not totally awful. I mean, TCU and Texas Tech, they're improved, but you have to beat them, and that's a lot of pressure. It's not always easy. But you look at the bottom of the SEC,
right?
And it's bad. It's real bad. And I think that's the difference with the Big 12.
When you mentioned Iowa State and you know, the great offensive team and the job that Fred Hoiberg's done, you know, when they hired him, I actually wrote a column, and I've owned up to this. I've talked to Fred about it, and you know, I mocked the idea because it seemed like desperate. You know, if Memphis, you know, was just lost a coach and had been going through a down spell, and they said, why don't we hire Penny Hardaway? You know, you know, people love him, and he used to play in the NBA. He has no coaching experience, but hell, let's give it a shot. If nothing else, it'll get our fans excited. And I don't know if I use that example exactly, but that's sort of what it reminded me of. Now, in fairness, I didn't have a good grasp of Fred Hoiberg as an NBA mind or a basketball mind or, you know, as a – I don't know. I just I had it pegged wrong, right? Although I left myself, as I tend to do, some wiggle room for, hey, he might be great. I don't know, but this screams desperation. As we sit here today, I guess is my point, not only has it been a good hire – he's now established himself as like one of the most respected coaches in college basketball, and he's probably the most likely guy to make the jump next from college basketball to the NBA if he wants to. He's had opportunities already. It's not a matter of, I wonder if Fred Hoiberg will ever have a chance to go to the NBA and coach. Whenever he wants it, he can take it. What do you make of this Fred Hoiberg Iowa State phenomenon?
Yeah, I totally agree. I do agree that he is the most likely guy who could make that jump right now and be successful at it. He has a great basketball mind. I think he'd fit into the NBA tremendously well if he wants to do that. And whenever he does, that's the job for him. I really don't see him jumping to another college job at this point. It seems like the perfect fit right now for him at Iowa State, and it is really going well. You know, they were a great three-point shooting team last year. They lost a lot of guys. They get Kane. I didn't think they'd do this well right off the bat. Now, the Michigan game, Michigan win looked better then than it does now. I was impressed with the Iowa win because I know Iowa's pretty good. I've been up there too. I spent a lot of time with Larry Brown down here in Dallas, and he just raves about Fred and his basketball credentials, his basketball mind, and there's no question that he could be successful in the right situation in the NBA, but I just hope we don't lose him for college basketball. I mean, I was really down when college basketball lost Brad Stevens because of what he meant to the coaching fraternity. I would hope that Fred could stay, you know, at least for a few more years at Iowa State.
I agree with you completely that he's not, I don't want to say he's not. I'd never rule anything out. You know, if Kentucky comes calling someday because they need a replacement, or if, you know, North Carolina came calling someday because they need a replacement. I'd never rule anything out. I'd find it hard to imagine, that said, Fred leaving Iowa State for another college job. I think his next jump, if there is a jump, is to the NBA. And I do think there will be a jump. I know that the NBA is intriguing to him. I also know that, that you know, he has great love for his alma mater and Iowa State, and he has a young family. And so, you know, that NBA schedule, that travel schedule can be a bit of a grind on a family. Like, it's not easy. You change not only your life, you change the life of your wife, your kids, everything. You know, I think he'll be in the NBA someday, but I don't think he's necessarily rushing it, because what he's proved, and maybe he didn't prove this to himself, maybe he just always assumed he could, but certainly what he's proved, I think, to the rest of college basketball is that, you know, sometimes guys will catch a team that's, it's just sort of the right combination. You'll win with it, and then you sort of sink back to where you were before. He's winning with different rosters. I mean, he's taking guys, plugging them in, and continuing to win at a relatively high level. I've just been blown away by what he's been able to accomplish. Let's stay in the state of Iowa for a second. You mentioned that you had been to Iowa, spent some time around that basketball program, that basketball team. And, you know, as you were in Kansas, Oklahoma last night, I was sitting at home and I watched Wisconsin just run Illinois completely off the court. And it just sort of maybe enhanced, certainly my opinion of Wisconsin, although I have a high opinion of Wisconsin for a while now, maybe my opinion of Iowa as well, because on Sunday we watched Iowa on the verge of winning at Wisconsin, and that's obviously a tall task almost regardless of the year, but especially this year. And when you see what Wisconsin did to Illinois on Wednesday night, it makes you think maybe Iowa's better than most people realize right now. Either way, we've got a league right now in the Big Ten with an Iowa team that's obviously pretty good, a Wisconsin team that is operating at an extremely high level. Michigan State is still Michigan State and back playing like the team that we thought they'd be in the preseason. What do you make of the top of this league, and specifically Wisconsin and Iowa, two teams that we saw play this past weekend?
Yeah, I got to tell you, Gary, about a month ago, I went up to Wisconsin, spent a good amount of time with Bo Ryan, with their players, watched the practice, and I came out of there thinking this is the year that they may make a serious run at not just a deep tournament appearance, but winning the whole thing. Yeah. And I never say that about Wisconsin because of their style, and I always think they're going to grind it out and play too many close games, even against teams that they should kind of blow out. But this team can play at any pace you want. They could win games in the 70s, 80s, 60s. I mean, they held Virginia to 38 points. Gosser's return has been tremendous. What he did to Joe Harris was very impressive in Charlottesville, and holding that Cavaliers team to 38 points again in that game was was phenomenal. It's not always a style that people are eager to watch, but it's so darn effective. And this could be the year that Bo Ryan gets to his first Final Four. I think they're charging toward a number one seed, and it sets up so well because they could play those first two rounds in Milwaukee. As for Iowa, I think they're a solid, sound NCAA tournament team. They have a great offense. Fran's done a great job recruiting. Aaron White is from a kid from Ohio, has really blossomed, added strength. He's very versatile. He fits well in that system. And I think they could really finish fourth in that league. And that's saying a lot because the Big Ten could be the best league in the country. But those top three teams, Wisconsin, Michigan State, Ohio State, I mean, they're all likely going to be vying for top seeds in the NCAA tournament. That's how good that league is. After that, I think Iowa fits right in there.
It's interesting because, like, yeah, as I was mentioning teams at the top of the Big Ten, I actually forgot or left out Ohio State. It does, you know, as we're sitting here on January 9th, I get the feeling that it's going to shape up a lot like it did last year where, you know, you can take the top four, maybe even five teams in the Big Ten and sort of, you know, flip them around in whatever order you want. And the team that finishes fourth or fifth might end up in the Final Four. Last year, Michigan was fourth in the Big Ten, ends up in the national championship game. So I don't know that there's a Trey Burke in this league again, but certainly some high caliber teams at the top. The last thing I want to talk to you about before I let you go is North Carolina specifically, because yes, you were at the forefront of the reporting on the PJ Hairston situation that ultimately led to his, I don't know if permanent dismissal is the right phrase, but he's ruled ineligible, and in North Carolina recognized how serious the violations were that they did not even try to ask for a reinstatement from the NCAA. At one point, it looked like North Carolina might be able to overcome that, but now they're 0-2 in the ACC. First things first, let's talk about PJ Hairston specifically. I have long said that the idea that North Carolina didn't even ask for reinstatement is evidence in and of itself of how serious these transgressions were. Now, we can argue about the NCAA rules if we want, and we can talk about how they're all stupid if we want to, but the rules are still the rules, and he knowingly violated the hell out of them, and then, at least I'm told, wasn't honest with investigators, which led to where we're at today. I guess this is what I want to ask you. Do you think there was ever a chance, once it was uncovered, and again, by you, that he was accepting presumably impermissible benefits in the form of, at least in one case, rental cars from a convicted felon? Do you think if PJ would have handled it differently from that moment, he could have returned and played it in North Carolina under some circumstances? Or do you think once he was caught, it was over at that point?
That's a great question. And my answer is very clear. Yes, if he had handled it differently, I think it would have been simply an extra benefit situation. How many times did you use the car? And I want to say I have no moral issue with a basketball player driving in a rental car from a party promoter. I don't care.
Right.
You know, people think I'm against Carolina. But, yeah, I mean, if he had handled it differently from that initial summer interview he had with the NCAA, I was thinking then, when I knew about the frequency of his use of the rental cars and how many there were, that he would sit out 10 to 12 games, roughly a third of the season,
sure,
like Leslie McDonald did. This whole thing turned the first week in November because I was driving back from Austin where I'd spent some time with Rick Barnes, and my phone just started lighting up with texts and calls from people involved in the investigation. I spent about a month in Carolina this summer. I've driven around with Fats Thomas in his Porsche on a Carolina campus. I've gone to the parties. I know the people involved at a deep level. And they told me what had occurred. And it was a dramatic turn in the case. And my first reaction was, whoa, well, that's a game changer, isn't it? And it was. And what it did was put the focus squarely on what PJ told the NCAA back in his initial interview, and there was conflicting information with what he had told them. And that's the cardinal sin, as you know, in the eyes of the NCAA. Do not lie. Whatever the transgression is, just come clean about it, face your penalty. But if you lie or mislead or omit, then you're really putting yourself at great risk never to play college basketball again. And once that happened, you know, people were telling me, and I thought as well, that Leslie would get about 10 games and that it would be hard to see PJ back on the court. And the only thing that surprised me was the delay from that period in early November until mid-December, when Carolina finally decided not to, you know, submit the request for reinstatement, you know, which was extremely telling because the nature of the violations were significant. But I was only surprised with that delay. I think they did handle it right in the end, rather than have a report released from the NCAA detailing the nature of the violations and dishonesty. They took a proactive move and just decided not to submit that request. And that was that. But, you know, what a saga that just dragged on all summer long.
Well, one thing that I don't want to say all North Carolina fans, because, you know, I can't speak for everybody, but a few North Carolina fans, they, you know, on Twitter couldn't quite grasp, is the point that I was trying to say is that he lied about, I don't want to use the word lied. Let's just say he wasn't forthcoming. He wasn't honest about his usage of the rental car. And I kept getting a lot of pushback from North Carolina fans who, for whatever reason, just couldn't grasp the concept. They'd say, well, Johnny Manziel lied too. And I would say, just so we're clear, I think Johnny Manziel lied. I agree with you. But the difference here is Johnny Manziel took a calculated risk as well. I think Johnny Manziel probably realized, with the help of high-priced attorneys, okay, if you tell the truth, let's say Johnny Manziel, for the sake of the conversation, actually took in excess of $10,000 to sign autographs. If he tells the truth, he's probably done, right? So at that point, he's almost put in a position where he has to lie, and then you got to hope they can't catch you in the lie or they can't prove that you're lying. Ultimately, as long as we can all agree that Johnny Manziel lied, I think he did, the issue there, what makes this difference, is the NCAA was not in a position to catch him lying. They could not prove that he was lying. They could roll their eyes at his story, but they couldn't prove he was lying. With PJ, for lack of a better phrase, the NCAA caught him lying. They had proof that he lied, and so that's the thing. If they're, you know, if you're going to lie, here's my thing. I'd never tell. I don't know what my advice would have been to anybody, but here's my bottom line. If you're going to lie to the NCAA, you better hope they don't find the information to catch you in that lie, because if they do, then you're done.
Totally. Yeah. If you lie, then you better know that you could get away with it. And I have to say, I mean, I talked to somebody very high up at Carolina when this first started breaking in June, and they underestimated this. They underestimated how deep it went and how much PJ and Leslie were involved. I could say that for a fact. And also, I mean, PJ was also under investigation for his relationship with Rodney Blackstock, an agent who I had written about was linked to Ben McLemore, an AAU coach. He's funneling money allegedly out there. So he's exercised poor judgment for a long period of time. And I was just, you know, for him, for his sake, I was hoping that somebody at Carolina court. But he was just so, I think, overconfident about getting away with a lot of what he did. I spent about an hour with him at a barbershop in Carolina in the summer, and he was very confident he can get back on the court in a couple games. Wow. And I thought it'd be more than that. But then once they were able to prove, you know, facts and information that contradicted what he had told the NCAA in that initial summer interview, then it really put the focus on that. And it was going to be hard to make a strong case to get him back on the court this season.
That's really interesting. Well, listen, man, I know how busy you are, that you were traveling back home last night, so I really appreciate you being here. And for everybody listening, I appreciate you guys being here as well, reading what we write, you know, listening to the podcast, following us on Twitter. Eric Prisbell, of course, is on Twitter. Make sure you are following him. Make sure you're reading his stuff over at usatoday.com. And remember, you can subscribe to the Ion College Basketball Podcast over on iTunes. So go ahead and do that. It's the quickest way to get your hands on the latest podcast. So make sure you do that over at iTunes. And either way, I will talk to you again real soon. Take care, guys.